It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
The costs of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa continue to rise. Central African Republic has a new Muslim prime minister. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. West Africa is struggling to cope with the effects of the Ebola outbreak that has taken more than 900 lives so far this year. Trying to contain the spread of the deadly virus is requiring restrictions, such as quarantining entire communities. Those restrictions are slowing transport, creating food shortages, and soaring prices. And Look begins our coverage of this unfolding story after security forces in Sierra Leone and Liberia last week set up roadblocks and took other measures to limit people movement.
In Liberia, they're calling it Operation White Shield. Information Minister Lewis Brown.
These checkpoints are already being established. Unless it is absolutely necessary, individuals in unaffected counties are strongly advised to remain in their counties and to continue to take the necessary preventive measures announced by the health experts.
The goal is to seal off at least 4 affected counties in the north and west of the country and the borders with Guinea and Sierra Leone. Health authorities say sick people and people who may have been exposed to the Ebola virus need to stop moving around and infecting new areas. Both Sierra Leone and Liberia have security forces guarding Ebola treatment centers and health workers. Sierra Leone sent its army to enforce what the government says will be a complete blockade of the Kenema and Calahoun districts on the country's eastern border with Liberia and Guinea. And Look, VOA News, Dakar.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has declared the Ebola outbreak a public health emergency of international concern. With that story, Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
The Director General of the World Health Organization, Margaret Chan, says recommendations issued by the committee aim to contain existing outbreaks in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, and to prevent further international spread.
The declaration of a public health emergency of international concern alerts the world to the need for high vigilance for possible cases of Ebola virus disease, but by no means implies that all countries, or even many countries, will see Ebola cases.
WHO notes it is particularly difficult to bring the disease under control because the 3 heavily infected West African countries are all emerging from civil conflicts that have left them with weak, fragile health systems. WHO Assistant Director General Keiji Fukuda says it is important to stop the chain of transmission, and this depends on identifying everyone that has the Ebola infection, tracing people with whom they have come in contact, and making sure those who are ill receive the right treatment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The WHO now says there are more than 1,800 cases of Ebola in West Africa. Nigeria suspended the Gambia National Airline from flying into the country, alleging unsatisfactory measures to contain the spread of the virus. Elsewhere, a Romanian man was placed in quarantine in Bucharest on suspicion of having contracted Ebola. A patient was being treated in Toronto. He had recently traveled to Canada from Nigeria. Meanwhile, another patient who traveled to Hong Kong from Nigeria tested negative for the virus. In the U.S. state of North Carolina, authorities said anyone returning from Africa who worked with Ebola patients will be put into quarantine. 2 missionaries from North Carolina-based aid organizations contracted the deadly virus working at a clinic in Liberia. The Central African Republic has its first Muslim prime minister, Mohamed Kamoun, a former special advisor to interim President Catherine Samba Panza, will lead a transitional government that is seeking to implement a ceasefire signed last month after a year of sectarian violence. Mr. Kamoun faces the difficult task of implementing a delicate political transition aimed at ending the deadly sectarian violence. South Africa's central bank has stepped in to rescue unsecured lender African Bank Investments, announcing plans for a $940 million capital injection underwritten by local lenders. The South African Reserve Bank will acquire billions of rand in bad loans after the bank warned of a full-year loss resulting in an exodus of investors. South Sudanese rebel leader Riek Machar held talks Sunday with Sudan's President Omar Hassan al-Bashir in Khartoum. It's their first meeting since hostilities in South Sudan broke out in December. During the South Sudanese bid for independence, Mr. Machar allied himself at various times with pro-independence groups as well as the Khartoum government. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 11, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Nigerian youth leader denies he is behind the assassination attempts against former President Muhammad Buhari.
Buhari failed in 2003. He failed in 2007. He failed in 2011. And certainly, if he's able to scale and get his party nomination, he's going to fail in 2015. So why should anybody bother with a failure like Buhari? Of what consequence is it to me to attempt to kill him in Kaduna?
That's Alhaji Mujahideen Dokubo Asare of the Niger Delta People's Volunteer Force. A young Zimbabwean entrepreneur talks about the effect of sanctions on his business. Liberia's vice president refutes critics who say his administration has failed to build roads or provide electricity.
We have built very, very critical infrastructure. And what you see in Liberia mostly is not what used to be there. The development is being decentralized. We're working with our partners in the sub-region. There are electricity now being connected from Cote d'Ivoire under the West African power pool. A lot of groundbreaking events have taken place.
That's Liberia's Vice President Joseph Boakai. Somalia's president talks about some of the issues holding Africa back. And women in South Sudan demand to be involved in the peace process. All that and Mark Omer's sports coming up next. A Nigerian youth leader of the Niger Delta People's Volunteer Force has denied allegations he planned the recent twin bombings in Kaduna. They were aimed at assassinating former President Muhammadu Buhari ahead of next year's general elections. Alhaji Mujahideen Dokubo Asare says the allegations against him are a calculated attempt by opponents of the ruling People's Democratic Party to undermine his support for President Goodluck Jonathan in the run-up to the vote. Dokubo Asare told me earlier that he supports efforts by the administration to fully investigate circumstances that led to the assassination attempt on the former president's life.
This thing is preposterous. It's so laughable. Well, what do I have to do with Buhari? Had Buhari ever been a threat to Goodluck Jonathan's ambition? They see me as one of the supporters of Goodluck Jonathan. Buhari, even before Goodluck Jonathan came up, he failed in 2003. He failed in 2007. He failed in 2011. And certainly, if he's able to scale and get his party nomination, he's going to fail in 2015. So why should anybody bother with a failure like Buhari? Of what consequence is it to me to attempt to kill him in Kaduna, in the heartland of northern Nigeria? These people are so desperate that they can go to any level to make accusations.
Are you therefore saying that this has political implications of these accusations?
It has far-reaching political implications. You remember that there was a report in my country of residence, Benin Republic, that I was leader of Boko Haram. I was arrested. It was investigated. It was found to be false. From our own investigation, we found out that all these were orchestrated by the opposition. So it has to do with politics, and they know my capacity. Nigerians know my capacity to support Goodluck Jonathan, and they know that whatever they are doing, whatever efforts they are doing, whatever plans they are doing against the president, Goodluck Jonathan, they are going to fail. And they know that if I am around in 2015, I will be a major stumbling block to whatever they are plotting against Goodluck Jonathan.
What do you say to your critics who say that you just are trying to make yourself more important than you are in Nigeria's day-to-day activities, including politics, and that these statements are unfounded and accusations being leveled against the opposition are just what you are trying to make yourself feel better?
Excuse me, how did I feel better that I was put underground for almost 2 years? I went through a treason trial. Up to today, I'm still undergoing a treason trial. Did I accuse, was I the person who asked them to make accusation that I was responsible for the stage-managed bomb blast in Kaduna? Was I the person who arrested myself in Benin Republic on the false accusation of being a mastermind, a financier of Boko Haram? If they want to make me, why should I want to be important?
Alhaji Mujahideen Dokubo Asare is leader of the Niger Delta People's Volunteer Force. He spoke with me from Nigeria's capital, Abuja. Liberia's Vice President Joseph Boakai says Liberians will determine what President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's legacy should be after two consecutive terms. But he says Liberia today is better off than before. He said they have enjoyed peace, freedom and decentralized development under President Sirleaf's administration. Critics say despite being endowed with abundant natural resources coupled with international goodwill, Liberia is worse off under President Sirleaf's administration. They cite the lack of electricity nationwide, pipe-borne water, even in some parts of the capital, and good roads and schools. But in this exclusive interview with James Batty, Vice President Boakai says he and President Sirleaf have done their best and will continue to do their best, especially for a country that went through 14 years of civil war.
Everyone in Liberia who wants to know the truth will know that they had never, ever enjoyed the freedom that they are enjoying now. Peace has prevailed for more than 10 years in Liberia. We have built very, very critical infrastructure. And what you see in Liberia mostly is not what used to be there. The development is being decentralized. We're working with our partners in the sub-region. There are electricity now being connected from Cote d'Ivoire under the West African power pool. A lot of groundbreaking events have taken place. And I think Liberians, if they want to be fair for where the country came from, where we've taken it to, they should be able to judge, be the best judges. I know the problems are enormous for a country that was at war for 14 years, but we've done our best, and we're willing to do more over the last couple of years that are left, and the Liberians will be the best judge for themselves.
It's true that there's a proliferation of media in Liberia, but people say the trend of media restriction has taken a new turn, where in the past, the government used to arrest journalists. Now they say your government is using the court to suppress freedom of information.
I don't think so. The government that I know of is not on record to have any prisoners who are journalists, because they are journalists. We have not taken, as a government, maybe private citizens may be offended. They might think that their rights have been infringed upon. They might take, but it is not a government. This is not true.
Are you thinking about running for president in 2017?
We're still far away. I always believe that the job you have at hand, do that well. I'm a Christian, and the Bible says, if you're faithful in that which is least, you might be faithful in that which is much. I'm not worrying about the future. The present will create a future.
Mr. Vice President, the U.S. visas of three Liberian government officials, including an associate justice of the Supreme Court, were canceled recently. What is your government's understanding as to why those visas were canceled?
When this happened, I think our president invited the ambassador, Ambassador Malak, and they talked about it. There have been a lot of innuendos, people trying to look for answers, but we know that the president had had with some top officials of the U.S. government. I think we'll get to know why. These might be some targeted individuals, but I hope that that can be resolved. We all get to know why, and perhaps if there are remedies that need to be put into place, we'll do that.
Liberia's Vice President Joseph Boakai spoke with James Batty in Washington, D.C. while attending the recent U.S.-Africa summit. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud was recently in Washington for the U.S.-Africa summit. He says Africa is developing politically and economically, yet he told reporter Vincent Macquarie there are still some issues holding the continent back.
It is a new dawn for the U.S. and Somalia relationship. As you rightly said, For the first time, we established our embassies back here in the United States in Washington, and the United States is establishing their own embassy in Somalia after all these long years. This is an indicator, one of the indicators, that the relationship between United States and the Somali government is improving, and improving very fast and efficiently. Our relationship is based on mutual interest. Yes, United States is a traditional donor partner to Somalia, but right now we are at a different level. We are in establishing a strategic partnership in economic cooperation. Somalia is a very rich country. We need the United States, and the United States needs us also. So we're sharing those mutual interests.
And now it's been 2 years since you took office. One of the promises you made is that your first priority would be security and stabilization of the country. But, you know, it seems that security in Mogadishu has only been getting worse, particularly this year with all the attacks here and there. What went wrong, really? And why has the government not been very successful up to this point in eliminating the major threat, Al-Shabaab?
Well, I do disagree with you on the description of the security situation in Somalia as a whole. The question is, whom are you comparing with Mogadishu and Somalia, with well-established countries or countries that are coming out of this terrorism war and all this against this? On the other hand, the Somali government last year has promised that the security will be the top priority of the government, and we make this priority implemented in many parts. The geographical location of Shabaab-controlled territories is shrinking, and that's why now Shabaab, when realizing that they cannot go the offensive against them by the Somali National Army and the AMISOM mission in Somalia, now they changed their war into a symmetrical war, urban warfare, and Mogadishu is the best place that they can do that. Over 2 million population in a city having over 2 million population, they can simply melt down into the society and hide themselves. That's what makes them, and this is for propaganda, for media only. Few Somali boys brainwashed, sending them. All of them, they failed, and many more has been aborted.
But, Mr. President, some are saying that Shabaab has been getting stronger and stronger. What would you
There's
say?
There's no proof for that. Shabaab is getting weaker and weaker. They're losing territories. They're losing financial income sources, and they're losing the confidence of the people. It is the Somali people. This is a war that where the party that gets the support of the people will succeed, and the Somali government is getting more and more support from the public today. Many tyrannical operations has been aborted with the support of the Somali people, and this is the end of the Shabaab is closing day after day.
That was Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud speaking with reporter Vincent Macquarie. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Today is Monday. Please send your comment and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Ahead on our program, Mark Omer Sport and our Listener of the Day. South Sudanese women's rights activists say the country's leaders have failed to bring the 7 months of fighting to an end and have deepened ethnic divisions. As Philip Aliu in Juba reports for VOA, women are demanding that they have a voice in the peace process from this point forward.
About 200 women from an umbrella group of women's organizations told members of the National Platform for Peace and Reconciliation in Juba that thousands of South Sudanese women and children lost their lives and thousands of others continue to suffer in IDP camps, but the delegates to the talk in Addis Ababa do not seem to care. They say it is only when women are included in the talks that unique gender concerns and concrete steps toward peace building will actually come to fruition in South Sudan. Jane Gordon, chairperson of the Women Network for Peace and Reconciliation, says the conflict has created hatred among South Sudanese ethnic communities. Gordon says women can restore peace and harmony to the nation. She says representatives of the women group hope to convey that message to President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar in person.
They said enough is enough. They don't want any fight. They wanted to meet President, and they wanted also to meet Riek, if possible. If they failed, they wanted to meet their wives because they are the ones suffering, and they wanted to talk to these ladies, to talk to their husbands, that we don't want to war anymore. Okay, there is a mistake between children as a mother. Children can fight. You come back and reconcile and let us go ahead with our development. Because we don't want to hear any guns at night. We don't want to even to run anywhere.
Gordon says women whose husbands and children are paying the ultimate price on the battlefields also when their voices hurt.
There is a gap between the women at the higher level and the grassroots women. We are going to plan for meeting between these women who used to go to Addis Ababa together and want to discuss with them face to face and see a way forward.
Gordon says the Grassroots Women Network for Peace and Reconciliation will be visiting internally displaced persons in camp to convey their message to other women, especially mothers nursing babies in difficult conditions. Women rights activist Guliba Florian Akim says she believes lasting peace will only be achieved at home if South Sudanese own the talks.
Peace will never be achieved in Addis. We can achieve peace in South Sudan, back in our localities where we are coming from. We believe as women, we are not fighting. It's the men fighting. Because these are our husbands, these are our sons, these are our relatives who are fighting. But as women, when we come together, we'll be able to unify these men.
The women say they will work with the National Platform for Peace and Reconciliation, and they will contact the members of parliament. But they will also continue to demand more representation at the negotiating table in Addis Ababa to try to achieve lasting peace in the country. For BOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
A young Zimbabwean entrepreneur, Takunda Chikunza, was thrust into the limelight when he shared the platform with U.S. President Barack Obama at the U.S. Africa Business Forum. Today, he says, he's seeking a meeting to discuss sanctions imposed on Zimbabwe by the United States in 2002 that he says are hampering Zimbabweans from doing business with American companies. Chikunza asked President Obama to clarify U.S. sanctions targeting President Robert Mugabe and members of his inner circle. The 21-year-old National University of Science and Technology student and co-founder of SciSci Wireless in Zimbabwe said his efforts to work with American firms have been affected by the sanctions. Reporter Mavlos Nyauye asked Takunda about his experience.
It was very exciting to get the opportunity to have a conversation with the president. But at the same time, I felt challenged to talk about all the issues that we're facing as African youth. Having gone through the Mandela Washington Fellowship and having received the training at the university that I was at, I felt that we have been empowered to take our business further, but we still have issues that are impediments rather to our progression on the continent as entrepreneurs.
And how was it for you? You sitting on that stage, carrying the weight of all Africa's youth, especially Zimbabwe's youth, to ask President Obama about the issue of sanctions, which is a very sore issue when it comes to Zimbabwe.
It is indeed a very, shall I say, tricky issue. It was almost overwhelming, but exciting at the same time. I'm not exactly sure how to describe the feeling. All that I was hoping for, and which is what happened, was to get a response from the president as to how we can carry on the economic development that we're trying to push for. We understand that there might be political differences, but I feel that they should not impede the business that we're trying to do on the continent. And so it was exhilarating to actually get the opportunity to converse with them. It was quite an experience.
And do you feel that President Barack Obama answered you adequately, especially on the issue of sanctions on Zimbabwe?
I feel that also given the time that was there, there were so many issues to be discussed. There were, so many heads of state, and there was a pre-arranged agenda for the summit itself, that the issue was not probably going to be addressed effectively there. But then the fact that he then made room to say the issue can be discussed a bit further, which I'm hoping to get the opportunity to do so this week, was adequate enough. I think if any answer were to be given there and then on that stage, it then was not going to be adequate. So I'm very happy with the answer that he gave us, and I'm hopeful that the follow-on conversations will result in our being able to carry on our business activities in Zimbabwe.
How do you take President Barack Obama's call for America's business people to give you the support that you need as a young entrepreneur? Did anybody come up and offer you any business opportunities?
I believe in business. It's two ways. You know, people, yes, will offer, but you also have to make that first move to approach people. And so, yes, my conversations after the interview were very fruitful. I met a good number of people who are interested in, you know, investing in Zimbabwe, even in both in projects that I'm working on and in other sectors that I myself am not working in, but I know a good number of entrepreneurs whom I'm also going to be working with through the hub that we're founding in Bulawayo. Those guys will also benefit, you know, from the network that I have created or the connections that I have been exposed to through this experience. Yes, they were very fruitful and I think are going to be productive.
That was young Zimbabwean entrepreneur Takunda Chikunzu talking with reporter Marvelous Nyahuye. Mr. Obama responded that the situation in Zimbabwe was unique, adding the challenge for the U.S. has been, in his words, a desire to help the people of Zimbabwe with what frankly has been a repeated violation of basic democratic practices and human rights inside of Zimbabwe. It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sport. Here is Mark Ouma reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Peter. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with basketball. Egypt beat Tunisia 80-69 to win the Africa Men's Under-18 Basketball Championships in Antananarivo, Madagascar on Saturday. Mali beat Angola 75-65 to clinch the bronze medal. Madagascar outplayed Ivory Coast 82-68 to place fifth. Mozambique beat Benin 72-63 to place seventh, while Gabon is ninth. In athletics, Eritrea's Nguse Amlosom triumphed in a thrilling sprint for the finish line in men's 10,000 meters on day one at the Africa Senior Athletics Championships in Marrakesh, Morocco on Sunday. Morocco's Mustafa Aziz was second and Kenya's Josephat Bett third. In men's shot put, Orazio Cremona and Yako Engelbrecht claimed a 1-2 South African triumph as Republic of Congo's Frank Elembe Owaka placed third. In football, Nigeria edged South Korea 2-1 to lead in Group C at the FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Moncton, Canada on Saturday. Elsewhere, Ghana fell 3-0 to North Korea in Toronto to lie third in Group A. Meanwhile, the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe and AS Vita beat Sudan's El Hilal 3-1 and Egypt's Zamalek 1-0 respectively in Orange Africa Champions League ties on Sunday. The Congolese qualify for the semifinals. Tunisia's CS Sfaxien pipped Libya's El Ahli Benghazi 1-0 as Algeria's Entente Setif and Tunisia's Esperance drew 2-2. Entente Setif will make their maiden semifinal appearance alongside last year's finalists CS Sfaxien. Elsewhere, Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosa and Mali's Real de Bamako drew 0-0 in Orange Africa Confederations Cup action on Sunday. Zambia's Nkana pipped Egypt's El Ahly 1-0. Republic of Congo's AC Leopards thrashed Cameroon's Cotton Sport 4-0 as Ivory Coast's Sewe Sport edged Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel 1-0. In Rwanda, Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority edged Djibouti's Telecom 2-1, Tanzania Mainland's Azam thrashed Zanzibar's KMKM 4-0, and Rwanda's Rayon Sports pipped Ethiopia's Adama 2-1 at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championships in Kigali on Sunday. Earlier on, Burundi's defending champions Vitalo crushed Somalia's Banadir 5-1 as Rwanda's military side APR and police pipped Burundi's Atletico 1-0 and Sudan's Elmerek 1-0 respectively. South Sudan's Atlabara and Zanzibar's KMKM drew 1-1. Kampala City Council edged Kenya's Gor Mahia 2-1 as Rayon Sports and Azam drew 0-0. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, Peter, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And here is listener mail for this Monday edition of Daybreak Africa.
I wish to call on the entire Nigerians to disregard the ongoing speculations that Ebola virus could be cured by bitter cola. If I may ask, is there no bitter cola in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia? We are only advised to abstain from unidentified bushmeat and maintain perfect cleanliness. I am Prince John here, Omanobu in Obodo Cathedral, Crossover, Nigeria. Thank you, West of America.
Thank you, listener, for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And that's it for this Monday edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, managing editor William Eagle, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm Peter Clote in Washington, wishing you all have a peaceful Monday.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.